From KELW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Nopa.
I'm from Pittsburgh.
I live in Sausalito.
I live in the East Bay, Hercules, California, USA, planet Earth.
Coming up, a look at San Francisco's innovative approach to housing homeless people through navigation centers.
We just mean a place that's welcoming, that you can bring the people that you love, and that we have enough storage and space for a lot of possessions.
There's nowhere to go but up. And it's a perfect opportunity, you know. And if it wasn't for the Navigation Center, we wouldn't be here. Bottom line.
And we meet a woman who can get you your mail even if you don't have a home address.
Sometimes, like you see the lady got the check, she's so happy. You feel okay. I do a good work today.
We continue our week-long coverage of homelessness in the Bay Area today on Cross Currents. All this week, we've been reporting on homelessness. As part of the San Francisco Homeless Project, today, 70 different media outlets across the Bay are all talking about the crisis in our region and what to do about it. For our first story today, we're going to take a look at a new approach in San Francisco to move homeless people into housing, navigation centers. They're temporary residences designed to connect people with long-term housing and social services, but without separating them from their partners, their pets, or their belongings. The Navigation Center focuses on serving the long-term homeless population, people that have been on the street for 5 years or more and don't feel comfortable turning to the traditional shelter system. The first pilot navigation center was set up last year in the Mission. Yesterday, the city opened its second in the Civic Center, and the Board of Supervisors has unanimously approved a plan to open 5 more in the next 2 years. We recently received a question about that first navigation center through our crowdsourced collaborative reporting project, Hey Area. Listener Marilyn Herond wanted to know what's happened to all the people who've gone through the center since it opened. To help answer that question, KELW's Ben Trefney sat down with the Navigation Center director, Julie Ledbetter.
Let's say that I'm homeless and I'm living in a tent right near here, just down the street. And how do I end up getting into the Navigation Center? How do I get chosen for that?
So the Navigation Center is invite only. We don't have any wait list. And really what we do is we send the San Francisco HOT team, the homeless outreach team, out into the community. You could be next door to the Navigation Center, or you could be in Golden Gate Park, or you could be in the Excelsior. The HOT team is going to know you and know you pretty well, and decide which cases are the most important cases to bring into the Navigation Center.
Well, let's go back to what this place is like. I mean, coming in, there's gates out front, and it's sort of would you describe it as a compound? It's sort of like a gated space?
One of our recent clients who just came in said, "Wow, this is so wonderful. It's like Harvard for the homeless." So I don't think people experience it as a compound. I think they experience it as kind of a respite and a more of a sanctuary.
So if I come in, I'm welcomed, and what is the process like? How do you help me find shelter or help me deal with whatever my issues are that left me homeless in the first place?
So we really focus on housing here. And like I said, we have prioritized access to our city system of housing. So we place people in primarily SRO, single-room occupancy hotels.
So if I come here, then do I meet with a case manager? Am I assigned somebody? Like, who do I start talking with?
Yeah, so day one can be a long day. You're really, asked by the HOT team to come in. You may or may not know the night before that you're going to get to make that change. The HOT team identifies folks, invites them, and then actually the Public Works will go out with their trucks and bring people, all of people's stuff. So they get a lot of assistance coming in. They get to bring all, everything that they have. And the HOT team will bring them. Then we register them briefly at the Welcome Center and then go straight into about an hour-long case management intake. And then directly from there, we connect them with the benefits program, so Medi-Cal, CalFresh, and CAP.
So what if I come in here and I'm addicted to something? Like, what if I have, say, a heroin addiction, or, you know, I'm addicted to painkillers because life's painful, then what, how does that work here at the Navigation Center, and how would that compare to, say, other shelter opportunities in the city?
System-wide, San Francisco's pretty good at being what's called harm reduction. So really focusing on people's behaviors, not on people's drug use. The times when we focus on it is when people want help with it or want to reduce the harms associated with their drug use. But in terms of our services, we don't have any expectation that people will stop using drugs. We don't allow drug use on site. If people are caught, we have, again, minimal consequences to that.
Like what?
We'll time people out for a couple days. We won't kick them out of the entire program because the goal is to really keep them engaged, right?
That's Julie Ledbetter. She's the director of the Navigation Center in San Francisco. So how do you help people transition from a life on the street through here into a housing situation in which, you know, things are much more maybe organized and regimented, and they need to be responsible for different things in their new life?
I think a lot of the transition happens organically. People are really forced to be in survival mode when they're on the streets, and the decisions they're making make sense for that environment. And then when they come in here and they don't have to hustle for their food or what their basic needs are, you really see the sense of calm begin to transform just their sense of well-being, their attitude, you know, and pretty quickly the choices that they're making and the opportunities they see for themselves and they're able to pursue since they have the basic supports in place.
So you work with the mayor's office. You have a different kind of perspective on this, but he's been getting a lot of flack for the way in which he's handled homeless in San Francisco with, you know, the tent cities that were going on Division Street underneath the highway overpass. And then, you know, with the police department's killing of Luis Gongora, for example, in one of those tent cities. How do you perceive the way Mayor Lee has handled homelessness during his administration?
Well, I'm not going to really comment on that, but I can say this is a pilot project and a demonstration project. So we're having visitors from across the country come, and it's a problem that everybody's facing. And in part, Navigation has sort of captured people's attentions because everybody's struggling with this, particularly on the West Coast and in coastal areas where it's a little bit warmer. But the homelessness is a national problem, and I think the way in which we've been able to draw attention to the issue is helping, I think, the nationwide effort. We need more federal money. We need more housing. It can't be solved on the local level alone. So I think focusing on greater resources is absolutely important.
As more Navigation Centers come online, if more housing doesn't come online, where do people process to?
Right. So the length of stay will be longer, and that's okay. I mean, we need capacity in our shelters. I mean, it's not okay in the big picture, right? We need housing. That's the solution here. But, you know, we need more capacity because the problem is just so big. We have so many people out there. So even if people are taking one step closer to a stable, healthy, permanent housing environment by being in a high-quality shelter, that's going to be good for them. But that's not the end that anybody wants. So we really need to push more for housing.
That was Navigation Center Director Julie Ledbetter speaking with KLW's Ben Trefney. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Last year, we reported on the opening of that first navigation center in the Mission. There, we met Delilah Soto, who, along with her girlfriend, Rocky Anderson, was seeking a pathway to permanent housing.
First day, it was kind of like surreal for me. Like, you know all the pretty pictures they have? I didn't even notice them till the second day. And I was like, wow, was I in that much? Because I was just like, oh my God. Because we've been out there since last July.
We wondered what had happened since we last heard from Delilah and Rocky. So we sent KLW's Meredith Hodnott to find out.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Rocky opens the door to their room on the sixth floor of a Tenderloin SRO, or single room occupancy. And we're greeted by happy barks and wagging tails.
Hi, Mama.
Hi, how you doing?
She's the first one at the door.
This is Barda. That's Bella.
The room is cozy. It doesn't fit too much more than their bed, some furniture, and the dogs. But Rocky and Delilah have a full bathroom to themselves, which makes them lucky in this building. They've been here for a little over a year.
Homelessness takes a toll, you know. It's a bunch of hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. You know, you got to stand in line to eat. Then you got to stand in line to take a shower. Then you got to stand in line to get a pair of new socks. Then you got to stand in line to get a snack. Then you got to stand in line, you know.
But we had our times where we had a place in Oakland for about 4 years. And so we were homeless before that. Then we had that. And then we were homeless again. And yeah, and then we got into the Navigation Center.
Rocky and Delilah say the Navigation Center was exactly what they needed.
And it was cool. It was different than any shelter. I wouldn't even want to say it was like a shelter because, you know, you got to bring your animal.
They embraced us all, you know, the animals. And they'd come in the morning. They wouldn't even say hi to us. Be like, where's Sparta at, you know? So the
we couldn't have done it without the Navigation Center. We really right. couldn't have. They gave us a shot. They really did. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and you know what I mean? And without this opportunity, we'd have probably still been homeless, honestly. Yeah.
The Navigation Center offered them personalized case management. Instead of hunting down each housing program or benefit office individually, Delilah and Rocky found everything they needed in one place.
We'd be like, okay, you know, we're waiting for it to go wrong, and we'll see. Well, they said this, and we'll see what happens. And it was actually, for once, they did what they said they were going to do.
Officials say that the average client spends about 3 months at the Navigation Center. Rocky and Delilah had their IDs and paperwork in order, so they moved through the program as quickly as possible.
It took them exactly 3 weeks to get us housing, you know, and we followed through.
But once the whirlwind died down, Delilah and Rocky realized just how big a change they had signed up for.
It's just that's all we knew, you know, and that was comfortable for us. So to have something else, you know, new or to be pushed into a new environment, which is like this permanent housing, you know, that's foreign. I never thought I would ever be okay with being inside because I've been sleeping outside for so long. So when I first got here, it felt like the walls were closing in, you know, and still to this day, I sleep with my windows wide open just to have that fresh air come in. It's a trip listening to the sirens go by all the time. Sometimes I laugh and just shake my head, you know, but not for the grace of God, there go I, you know. I'm one hit away.
Yeah. On the street, they did their best to avoid the Tenderloin. That's where they used to get high, and there were all sorts of triggers calling them back. And now, their new home is right in the middle of it.
We kind of felt like it was a setup, coming back into this area. Like, wow, at first we were like, man, really? You know, we fought all this way just to get here to get knocked back down because of the environment.
The hustle and bustle the out hustle there. It's like the energy gets tuned up. You can almost feel it. And it's like, you can buzz off it almost, and she does.
Yeah.
And so, in the first 2 months under their new roof, Delilah and Rocky relapsed. The stress of such a dramatic life change wore at them, and they fell back on old habits. They didn't pay rent, they racked up citations, and they should have lost their housing. But they didn't. The Navigation Center and Episcopal Community Services came together and found them money for back rent. They also set them up with meetings and programs to help them get clean.
I'm really grateful to be here. The staff,
The staff is wonderful. They opened their arms up here too. Like if they see something in us that we don't, you know, so they do their best if you reach out to them to try to bring it out.
Now, over a year later, Delilah and Rocky have a solid community and are working on building more stable lives. Rocky has a plan for a low-income dog grooming business, and she already has clients throughout the building. A flea dip, cut, and nail clipping for only $20.
Just because people are homeless or because people have low income and they have their animals doesn't mean that they can't take care of them.
We leash up the dogs, Sparta and Bella, and get ready to go on a walk.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you really guys for opening up your home and letting me hear about how you guys have been
this
doing.
This isn't home. This is the spot. We call this the spot.
The spot. Yeah. We don't want to get stuck in the comment saying home because, but you know,
we're still on the search for home.
On the way down, Delilah hangs back, but Rocky has a beaming smile and a wisecrack for everyone. Neighbors, caseworkers, building staff. And once we're outside, Rocky introduces me to every dog on the block.
That's Maria, the crazy pit bull. Oh,
and that's Pepper.
And that's Pepper, one of the Spartan spotness. What's up, Killer? There go Killer.
So, you know, we still have our little personal stuff, you know, that everybody does. You know, there ain't a day that goes by that ain't something coming up. But, you know, overall, like, we're healthy, you know, we're happy. We're not where we want to be, but we're not where we used to be.
When they finish walking the dogs, they'll head back up to the spot. It might not be home, but at least it's their own.
Yeah, head dog groomer of the TL. Tenderloin dog groomers.
For Cross Currents, I'm Meredith Hodnott. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. When you're living on the street, mail can be an essential way to connect with social services and keep personal relationships going. But where does your mail get sent when you don't have a home address? KLW's Jessica Plachik brings us this story from the Tenderloin Post Office's general delivery window.
Most welfare checks get delivered at the beginning of the month, so those are Hong Fan's busiest days.
Yeah, my name is Hong Fan.
Fan is a U.S. postal worker. She's been at the Tenderloin branch in San Francisco for about 10 years. And most of that time, she's worked the general delivery window. General delivery is where you can get your mail if you don't have an address. So that means a lot of Fan's customers are San Francisco's homeless.
No mail for you today. Okay.
It's a busy morning. Fan rarely has more than a couple minutes away from the window before another customer calls her over. She recognizes almost everybody. As soon as she sees them, she runs to the back to get their mail.
Here your mail, ma'am.
Some customers come like clockwork on the first or second of every month, lining up for their checks. Others come more often, expecting cards, packages, news, or employment, like Mangi Irizarry.
We use it almost every 2 weeks. Every 2 days. Almost every day. She recognizes us. She's really good. She's really fast.
Irizarry tells me she and her partner recently got priced out of their home in San Francisco and now live in a homeless shelter. They're some of the newer regulars. Others have been using this service for years, like Ambrose Black Horse.
Horse.
Horse?
Yeah.
H-O-R-S-E?
Yeah, just like giddy up, giddy off.
How often do you come to the post office?
Every 10 days, if I could.
Black Horse is an older Native American man. Today, he's picking up a check and some personal mail. He's been living in San Francisco since 1970. He's homeless, but he says that ends next week.
I go home to see my daughter and my grandchildren.
That's
great.
Five. Where's home?
Sacramento.
Many of Fan's customers have been coming here for a long time. All morning, she leans over and whispers little bits of gossip to me about various people who come to her window. Like, this guy's an artist, that guy served in Vietnam. After one woman silently came to collect her mail, Fan turned towards me.
Then especially I remember her because she doesn't have any business mail. She have only personal mail only. Oh. Yeah, from friend or some family in a foreign country.
A lot of Fawn's customers recognize her, too. They even have a nickname for her.
Mama, I know I got it today.
Everybody calls you Mama.
I'm getting old.
I told you, whoa. I love you.
Thank you.
She has the patience of a saint.
That's Gladys Amantea Hugh, another postal worker at this station.
Some of us aren't that patient, but she just really tries to help people. She just pretty much takes everything they dish out, you know, except if, like, if they're going to cause her bodily harm or something.
Amantea Hugh says a lot of the people who come through these doors struggle with mental illness and substance abuse, and some of them are in and out of jail.
And do you ever feel in danger?
Yes, we do. We do.
And would you say that that window is probably one of the most difficult post office windows in the city?
Yes, absolutely.
I visited the Tenderloin post office twice, on two different days, over the course of a few weeks. In that time, both windows had their blinds ripped out by angry customers. And that's not all.
You can see people, they pull on the floor, they put on the garbage can on the door.
They poo then, on it?
Yeah. Then one day I come back from lunch, they put on my counter.
What?
Yeah, I have go to clean up.
Yes, somebody pooped on her counter.
How do you stay so positive?
Oh, you know, I have no choice, first of all. Yeah, but, you know, if you you don't have the positive attitude, your day very long, every day become very dreadful. But, you know, some day is good, some day is bad. Yeah.
Is today a bad day or a good day?
Maybe 50-50.
They used to have guards stationed at the post office, but now they only stop by as part of regular patrols. Fawn says people used to shoot up in front of the P.O. boxes and pass out. That hasn't happened in a while. Fawn isn't sure why. But customers can still be violent and make threats when they don't get the mail they expect.
So technically, I don't need to have another ID, because my mailbox is here.
Like this guy. He didn't have his photo ID, which is required to pick up mail. A lot of people here use mugshots as ID.
You can go to the A50 Brighton, you get the mugshot there.
That's just a few blocks away, but this customer refused and spent 20 minutes yelling at Fawn. She couldn't reason with him. So she went into the back of her office to quietly put mail away while he continued to make threats at the window.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm all right.
You think I'm joking? Watch me.
Things got so bad that when other customers walked in, they saw him and turned right around and left. I walked towards the back of the post office where Amantea Hugh was making a phone call.
And right now we're calling the cops?
I'm trying to, but they didn't answer. So if he escalates, I will have to call him again. He was removed yesterday because he became violent.
Call the cops.
Either you're going to jail or I'm not going to jail.
Today you come here, not a good day.
Do you feel really good doing this job? Do you feel like you're helping people a lot?
You know, if you don't have that kind of feeling, difficult to work here. Yeah, but sometimes, like you see the lady got the check, she's so happy. You feel okay. I do a good work today. Yes.
It's a tough job, but Fawn does it all while smiling and laughing. It's part of the Postal Service mission. Inscribed on the Postal Museum in Washington, D.C., it reads, Messenger of sympathy and love, servant of parted friends, consoler of the lonely, bond of the scattered family, enlarger of the common life.
Yeah, me also.
For Cross Currents, I'm Jessica Plachek.
Since this story last aired, the general delivery window has moved. You can find it now at 391 Ellis Street. As as we report on homelessness this week, we want to hear your thoughts. What do you think can be done to help? Send us an email at news@kalw.org or leave us a message at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and we may get your comment on the air. Today's team includes Lila Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Meredith Hoddenott, Angela Johnston, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Eli Wertschafter, and Jordan Winters. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by San Francisco band Go By Ocean. They play tomorrow night at Bottom of the Hill in the city. Music starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
You got away too soon. You're the one that knows me better than